Welcome to the next episode of the Be One Change One podcast. Before we get started, I just wanted to throw out a couple of things about this episode. This episode talks about, in various places, suicide, suicide prevention, what leads to it sometimes, some statistics. And I just wanted to throw this out there in the very beginning that if suicide is something that you're uncomfortable with or you have deeply rooted issues with, this may not be the episode for you. You can fast forward to about the 25-minute mark and get into kind of the meat and potatoes of the discussion. Also, if you are suffering from depression, loneliness, isolation, self-deprecation, please text 988 or call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. You can also text 741-741. And on any of those, there's a mental health professional on the back end of that that can help you get the resources that you need and get you some help. You can call me. You can call Cass. Reach out to us through our podcast, and we'll get you in touch with the right people. Thanks for listening. This is the Be One Change One podcast, where our mission is to help listeners define values, practice integrity, and inspire change.
Our vision is to mentor men and empower them to achieve more by taking responsibility for shaping their own lives.
He's Cass, an evolving man who has been shaped by adversity and continues to grow through his imperfections.
And he's Roscoe, an imperfect work in progress that tries to suck less every day.
Between us, we have over 40 years of Air Force fighter pilot experience with countless hours as trainers, instructors, and mentors.
Join us and learn to take responsibility for your own life as we dive into subjects from leadership to resilience to vulnerability.
Be the one who changes their course. Be decisive, driven, and purposeful. Set the example for others. Lead. We wish we'd had this show when we were younger men.
Be the one.
So here's a nickel on the grass to you, my friend. In your spirit, enthusiasm, sacrifice, and courage, but most of all, to your friendship. Yours is a dying breed, and when you're gone, the world will be a lesser place. Nickel on the grass. So that's been a version of that's been around since at least probably World War II. I forget the exact guy's name. I did a little bit of reading on it. He did a bunch of research. He was in the rockets, the 336th, and did a bunch of research and put together this fighter pilot's hymnal. And there was a version of that. It's an old British limerick. They changed the words just a little bit, but they started singing it in the Korean War a lot. And,
yeah.
And it's got multiple verses and all that shit. You know the song or the tune.
I do.
And it's been traditional for decades now. In the fighter pilot community, when a brother goes down, that you throw a nickel on the grass.
Yep.
And I don't know if you ever saw the pictures of Robin Olds's headstone with all the nickels all over it.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at right now is less than 48 hours ago, I got a phone call that one of my really good bros took his own life. And that makes two of my bros now in the last 90 days. And, it's hard. It's hard to process.
It is.
You know, it's on one hand, you're kind of angry at the individual. Like, motherfucker, why didn't you call me?
Yeah.
On the other hand, you're sad. You know, I want to go and wrap his wife up in my arms and just pat her on the back and tell her it'll be okay, even though that's a fucking lie.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, man. It's so many mixed emotions.
It is. Yeah, it's just... When it happens, it's always hard for me to process because I remember them, you know, especially the guys that I haven't seen for a while. I remember them, how they were in the squadron, you know, and how full of life they were and how much they meant to everybody. And it just seems like such a waste, man.
That's it. You know, as soon as I found out, like Katie, the wife texted Katie as soon as she found out because they've remained really, really close. And me and the individual, we've,
you know, as fighter pilot bros, we kind of go our separate ways. You're always brothers. You may not talk to each other for a couple of years, but as soon as you see the guy, it's like you saw him yesterday, yeah. You know, and, but, she texted Katie. Katie came running back in my office. I was back there editing an episode of the podcast, actually. And Katie's bawling, crying. And, you know, my initial reaction was kind of, I don't know that I was completely shocked. Like, maybe I saw this coming subconsciously.
Yeah.
But within about 5 minutes, I called another buddy who's over on the East Coast. And I said, hey, man, I hate to get you out of bed, but you need to know this. And I told him, and we just started kind of exactly what you were just saying. We were remembering, like, this dude was always so full of life. He just had energy, you know, and some of it was, a lot of it was sarcastic and cynical.
Yeah.
But it was vibrant.
Yeah.
You know, and how do you go from that to being so far down that you even contemplate this stuff? Like, it just doesn't compute to me.
Yeah, we're not trying to start the show off with a bummer, you guys, but the point of this discussion, the reason that Roscoe and I decided to share some of this stuff today was for a couple of reasons. And one of them is like the stuff that we're trying to convey in this podcast when it comes to self-inspection and defining values and things like that, like it's important, man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've talked about on previous episodes, we're all going to go through transitions in life, right? And those transitions can be very difficult to move through at times, especially kind of like you've talked about coming from the fighter community where it's so easy to get your identity in many ways wrapped up around doing that. Cause it's cool, man. I mean, it's badass. Let's be honest. Right. And people think it's badass, you know? And so, but when the door closes on that, like it slams pretty hard. And now all of that stuff that you've been used to, that battle rhythm to it, the day in, day out, just that grind is gone. It's really hard to know what's next and to find that why to move forward, you know, and you went through that yourself. And I think that's what a lot of guys struggle with, you know, especially, you know, I was looking up some statistics and the CDC says that suicide rate for men in the United States has been increasing since 2000. And from 99 to 19, it's increased by 26.4%, with the largest increase seen in the age group of 45 to 54 year olds.
Dude.
And I think that like that age group that's that transition period, right? Maybe you're switching careers. Maybe you're going through a divorce. There's like all these, your kids are leaving for school. There's all these really big transitions in life that kind of happen in that time frame. And if you're not grounded and balanced and kind of know who you are, that can be really difficult for people to maneuver through, I think.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And, you know, it blows my mind that, well, I mean, in the fighter squadron, we saw this a lot. You're not exactly encouraged to get up and talk about your feelings. And you're not exactly encouraged to take a knee when you're having a bad day. The expectation is you power through it.
Yeah, brush yourself off, get better.
You get in the fucking jet and you complete the mission.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't really care about how you feel about it. Did you execute, yes or no? That was kind of the end question. And you've alluded to it before about have a guy that's struggling and you think he just sucks and doesn't have the skill or the talent to do the job, when in reality he's fighting a battle at home that you had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, getting a divorce or his dog died or whatever it is. So yeah, it's really hard. And those statistics are alarming, that not only the increase, but how rapid the increase has been. And despite all of the efforts, like you can't hardly throw a rock on the internet without hitting a support group for this kind of stuff. And yet we're still seeing an increase in this shit.
Yeah. Well, I think some of that goes to just the social norms and stuff that we face as men in a lot of ways. Cause that same article that I was reading about the statistics just talks about that, you know, research has shown that men are less likely to seek help for mental health issues due to stigma, social norms, and traditional gender roles, right? We're kind of taught to don't talk about our feelings. Just nug it out, get through it. It'll get better, right? Whatever. You just push on, push through. Well, what happens when you can't do that anymore?
Yeah.
You know, what happens when the losses start piling up and it just becomes so overwhelming that you sit there and drink yourself to death?
Well, maybe you don't even recognize it at the time. You know, maybe you're just, you're so conditioned. Maybe we fell into that trap once or twice where you're conditioned to just kind of choke down and say, well, I'm going to just power through it. I'm just going to power through it. It's like, it's like being sore after a really good workout. I'm just going to power through the next one. I'll be okay. You know, before long though, it snowballed. It's like a pimple, you know, this pimple's growing and getting redder and redder. And before you know it, it's got to pop. You know, eventually all these things have to rise up.
Yeah.
So, one of the, you know, interestingly enough, and this event, these events happened after we had kind of made the decision of what this episode was going to be about. And we were going to title this episode 4-letter F words. Before you get your mind completely in a gutter, we were going to tie them into the last discussion, which was all about values and walking in those values, you know, the integrities and the things like that. And then this event happened, and I think it even ties that knot even tighter.
Yeah.
When we start talking about these 4-letter F words here in just a minute, I think we're going to be able to draw it back. We can use this incident as the focal point to talk about why this shit is important.
Yeah, well, here it is to me, man. I mean, this is the bottom line is, whoever's listening to this right now, it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how successful or unsuccessful you are. It doesn't matter where you're at in life. Adversity is going to kick you square in the junk.
Yeah.
You know, and there's going to be things that hit you and they hit you hard.
Yeah. Real life happens whether you like it or not.
And the difference is how you respond to it, right?
Yeah.
And whether or not you know enough about yourself and are self-aware enough to ask for help when you need it, or to pivot and make a change when you need it, or mm-hmm. to recognize, yeah, man, this has been difficult and here's some shortcomings and I need to nug through that and figure out what this is all about and what I need to do to get myself better.
That's right. And you know, one of the goals of this podcast and you and I having these discussions and trying to throw out some of these vulnerable things, like who wants to sit around and talk about suicide? Like that's probably if I had to make a list of 5 least favorable subjects, that'd probably be in the top 5. Right. But it's critical that we get these words out there, and it's critical that we keep this conversation going so that you have tools in your toolbox when life kicks you in the fucking nuts.
Yeah.
And it will.
It will.
One day it's going to kick you square in a jimmy. And if you don't have these tools in your toolbox to be able to deal with that shit, like you just made a comment. It was a passing thing, but you said, choose whether or not you're going to respond. Dude, you're going to respond one way or another. You're going to respond. You're either going to be in the fetal position in the corner, or you're going to stand up and stick your chest out and look it square in the face. And that's what we're hoping to get to.
Yeah.
Give you the tools, the tips, the tricks, the strategies, the tactics, the tools in your toolbox to be able to do this stuff, to be able to handle adversity, to be resilient, to be able to stand back up when you get, what was it, Rocky had that really good quote. It's not about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Yeah, well, that ties kind of into one of the first 4-letter F words we were going to talk about today, which was fear. Because my guess, and I didn't know the second person as well, but the first guy, we both knew very well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what happens a lot as men is, you know, something happens in life. Maybe you go through a divorce, relationships end, estrangement with a child, lose a job, transition jobs, right? There can be a lot of shame wrapped up in that. And I think that shame, that worry, that fear of shame and how are people going to judge me and what do people think of me is what prevents guys from reaching out.
Yeah.
You know, with our first friend, I guarantee you there was a ton of shame around the amount of drinking that was probably going on and what was really going on for him that prevented him from ever reaching out to one of us. Cause I know for a fact that there were at least 4 or 5 bros that had recognized that something was off in that last 6 months or so and had reached out on multiple occasions.
I was one of them
and never got an answer. I was too. So was Bodie Bacon. I mean, after talking to the bro network, there were several dudes that were doing that.
Yeah.
And you've said it before in previous podcasts, man. I mean, you can't let fear drive your decision-making. you got to be brave enough. Like being vulnerable is the most courageous act you can take. It takes a ton of courage to be vulnerable and to raise your hand and go, dudes, I need help.
And when we're talking about fear, we're not just talking about the fear of heights and the fear of spiders and all the phobias and all that bullshit. Obviously that's part of it. That's going to be a part of it, but we're talking about the fear of failure and how that makes you look and how you're going to be viewed by the community that you're in. You know, it doesn't matter if you work on a construction crew, if you work at a bank, or if you're in a fighter squadron full of type A dudes, you're going to have a little bit of, I don't know, reservation or hesitancy in your actions sometimes because you're assuming that you're going to be judged by your peers, by your mates. And sometimes that can resonate. That can resonate loudly to a point where it deafens you to be able to recognize some of the things that are going on. And before you know it, you get down a road of depression and loneliness and substance abuse and all these things. And really all you had to do was say, guys, I need help. I don't know what I'm doing here. Or, hey man, can I talk to you for a few minutes? Step into an office, close the door and spill your guts. I mean, just that act of getting shit off your chest sometimes is enough to calm you down a little bit. Look, get it out. Throw it out on the table. Maybe the guy has good advice. Maybe he doesn't. But just venting a little bit can lessen some of your anxiety. And I'm not a doctor or anything, but I know that sometimes when Katie sits there and just takes the brunt of my bad day, it makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, reach out for sure. Whether that's, you know, a close friend. I guess it's in some ways it's situation dependent, you know, but you know, if you're really having some issues too, right? Mm-hmm. There's always mental health professionals out there too, which we 100% talked about on a previous podcast. Like there's no stigma attached. My wife is a therapist. There's no stigma attached with going to therapy. I got
your wife's number, by the way.
Yeah. I've gone to therapy. I mean, and it does great things, right? Those people can help you build skills and tools to kind of deal with the stuff that you're facing and help you see things a little bit clearer and, you know, kind of do the work that needs to be done to get through that stuff. Because a lot of times with the issues that we face, especially around something like fear, if it goes back to shame, it's because of some other previous trauma that people have had in their lives that they've never really dealt with. You know, and when that becomes aggregated and it just kind of builds on itself over and over and over again, I think that's when people really start to feel overwhelmed and like they just don't have the power to overcome it. Yeah. And then if they're too afraid to talk about it because of how they're going to be judged, like that's a powerful thing, man. And it's mostly false because the people around them that love them won't, you know, if somebody really loves you, they're not going to judge you for poor decisions you've made. Yeah. They're going to help you find a way out.
Well, I mean, okay, so let's just step back in a few years ago when we were still wearing bags. Did you enjoy going to the doctor because your back hurt? No. Because what was the ultimate like reprisal?
Yeah.
He was going to give you a 1042 that said you can't fly.
Can't fly.
Right? And dude, that was hard. Our whole existence was getting in that jet and strapping it on, you know? With how many years was there this big, just, I mean, nasty black cloud over the mental health thing? And it really only started coming out. We were several years deep into the Afghan and Iraqi wars when they started realizing that, holy shit, PTSD is a real thing. These guys are coming home and they're all fucked up. And that's when they started to kind of remove that cloud or at least change it to a different shade of gray a little bit. But in the career field that you and I were in, it loomed dark for a lot of years, because you knew if you went in and you said, I mean, security clearance alone, you go in there and start squawking about mental health shit, they might suspend your security clearance because they don't know what you're going to say under pressure, things like that. So that shit is real, man.
It is. But I think that stigma's shifted a lot in the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I would hope so.
And so my hope is that, you know, especially for younger guys out there that are listening to this, like these social norms about being the tough guy, don't show emotion, don't express emotion, don't deal with mental health, just push through. You can. And there's times that you have to. But, dude, I'm here to tell you, man, if you just push through and don't deal with stuff, eventually it's going to find a way out.
And when it does, pimple's going to pop.
And when it does find its way out, it's never pretty. I mean, I've done that. I did that stuff in the Air Force, man. When a good friend of mine was killed in Iraq, I spent a long time helping his family through that transition, and wife with five kids and months, you know, and all of the stuff that I was feeling personally was just put on the back burner for 2.5-3 years yeah. as I just kind of pushed through it all. And finally I had to come to sorts with it, you know, and I had to just deal with it too, because it was an impediment at one point.
Well, you know, when you're having that caregiver syndrome, you don't give yourself a chance to grieve sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like, and I think that men, we fall into this trap a little bit with our families. Something happens with our family and we think that we have to be the rock that everything crashes again. And to an extent, that's true. All right. As the leader of the family, to an extent, yeah, okay, I'll get that or I'll take that one. But at some point you have to go through that grieving process too. And it's a process. I've seen it with guys. I got a really good friend that recently went through a divorce. They've been married for 15, 20 years, something like that. And I was calling him every couple of months, and it was neat to me to see the process kind of working. You know, every time I'd call him, he goes, yeah, okay, I'm kind of in this phase now. And so that was good. He was working through it, you know, and if you don't give yourself a chance to work through it, then we've said it already a few times now, that shit's going to boil up.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and a lot of this just really, I think psychologically, probably more so for the males than the females, but it probably comes down to peer pressure. Comes down to peer pressure and the fear of maybe looking wimpy in the eyes of your bros. But if in a perfect world, if we could all sit around a table and all of us take our shields down, everybody's going through the same shit, man.
Yeah. None of us are that different.
Every family has their own level of dysfunction.
Yeah.
Every man, every woman is fucked up in some way. You know, and that's just true. It's just real life.
Yeah, we all have our demons that we're struggling and fighting with.
Now, we all deal with it maybe a little bit different ways. Some of us have different outlets than the others. Maybe some of us like to go shoot guns. Some of us like to, I don't know, go for a long walk and watch a sunset. However you deal with it, man. I guess my thing, you know, getting back to the fear and then bringing it back to the opener was, if you're in a position where you feel like you can't raise your hand for fear of judgment, or fear of failure, or fear of being looked upon as kind of the wimpy kid in the corner, A, that's not true, right? B, don't let that paralyze you. Please, for the love of God, don't let this boil up and get to a point where you are so self-loathing and depressed and isolated that you feel like you can't recover, because you can. You 100% can recover.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. You just got to have a plan and a little bit of preparation and some help along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to piggyback on that, just in case, if anybody there is struggling with these kinds of things, there are resources out there. So the suicide hotline, you can just dial 988 from your phone, or 1-800-273-8255. We'll take you to the National Suicide Hotline where you can get immediate help. Yeah. For prevention. I think there was a text too. Was it 7171?
741-741.
741-741.
Yeah. Just text help or whatever to that, and there's a mental health expert on the other end of that that can start a chat with you and get you in touch with the right people, the right professionals. You know, Cass and I aren't quote-unquote professionals at this, but we are grown-ass men. We've seen a little bit. We've been to war. We've had bros die in the line of combat. We've had family members be in trouble. I mean, I have very close family members that have been to rehab multiple times trying to get help, you know, and maybe the first few times it wasn't their idea and that's why it didn't stick. But eventually, you know, because their families gave a shit about them and because they were a little bit open-minded, eventually they got into a program that worked and stuck. And I'm happy to report that they're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, but please, please, people, call me, email me.
Yeah.
I'm not a smart guy, but I can get you in touch with smart people.
Yeah, I know a lady.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah. All right, what's the next one?
Well, let's go into fear just a little bit more outside of, if you don't mind, just for a few minutes outside of the conversation around suicide and things like that. So, because fear can come in many forms, right? Especially in the work environment, maybe a fear to speak up, or fear to give a presentation, or things like that. So, I would just say that the best way to overcome fear is what you've already talked about in a previous episode, which is preparation, right? What's your big three on that preparation? Do you remember what they were?
For courage?
Yeah, it was courage.
Knowledge, experience, discipline, determination, attitude, commitment, necessity, preparation, perception.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote down under courage.
So the big piece of that, right, for overcoming fear is to prepare yourself, right? So if you've got something coming up at work and you're a little worried about a presentation or something like that, dude, take some time and practice it, right? Make sure your slides are good to go. Make sure whatever it is top notch. You've got kind of all your lines, all your ducks in a row, and you know what the flow is going to be and how you want to talk about things. Maybe even think of some questions you may get along the way so that you're prepared to answer those. Preparation will help you a lot to make you feel more confident, and that confidence is going to help to negate that fear response a little bit. And the biggest thing with fear too is just it's okay, recognize it's okay to be afraid, or you know, to have some fear, to be nervous about things. We've talked about this in previous episodes too, about, you know, the first time we went to combat, but you can't let it control your decision making process. So just have a little courage over it. Choose that courage over comfort, that vulnerability piece like we were talking about. And just realize too that when you're being courageous, it's not about winning or losing. It's just about having the courage to show up and do what you got to do regardless of what the outcome is.
Yeah. And, you know, as we're talking about values and talking about trying to wrap it back up to all things be one, change one, and all these things all tie together, you know, and it's one thing for us to sit here across from each other at a table and say, be courageous, you know, and go paint blue paint on your face and yell freedom and, you know, go take the Scots or whatever it was Braveheart did. But putting these things into action every day, yeah, you can make yourself, you can become courageous, whatever you're facing, through preparation, through experience. I mean, think about the first time you flew a jet versus the 10th time you flew a jet,
yeah.
Right? That's just experience, man. And you're going to get better at things. And don't take that failure or that kick in the junk initially or that substandard performance, don't take that as an indictment of your self-worth. It's not, you know, it's a learning opportunity. And that'll be one of the next four letter F words that we talk about here in just a minute. We'll get into more details on this, but this is how you gain confidence, and confidence can lead to courage.
Well, you know? And don't listen, like, again, going back to being worried about judgment or shame or even how other people perceive you. When I went to Embry-Riddle my first year, I was in the aviation program. I already had a private pilot's license, but in the aviation program, I had to go through this, their private pilot thing so that I could be qualified in whatever Embry-Riddle thought was their way of doing things. And I was nervous, you know, because I'd only flown with Jink to that point in my life, really, as an instructor. And I hadn't had exposure to kind of a formalized training program in that sense. And the first guy that I had as an instructor, we did not get along at all. And it wasn't very fun every day flying with him. He was just kind of a douche. And I'll never forget, man, he flat out told me one time after we got done flying that I would never be anything but a recreational pilot. So think about that, man. I'm in my first semester at college, and the guy that's evaluating me is basically telling me that I don't have the skills to do anything but be a recreational private pilot VFR kind of cat. Now, I could have done two things with that. I could have gotten into a whole bunch of judgment and gone, well, I guess this isn't for me, you know, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I'm not cut out for this path, and let that unravel me over the next couple of years. Or go, yeah, whatever, dude. That's your opinion. I know what I want to do. I know where I'm trying to get. Yeah. I know where I want to go, and I'm going to push forward. You know, I'm going to trust myself. I'm going to trust. I know who I am. I know what I'm about. I know what I'm capable of.
Yep.
And thanks for the input, right? Because I was a little more than a recreational pilot at the end of the day. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
With all the stuff that we've done and all the stuff that we were qualified to do and what I do now, I'm not a recreational pilot at all. In fact, I can't stand flying little airplanes anymore. But so anyways, you know, so that's just an example, right? Yeah. I mean, you're going to get, there's going to be those people in your life that are going to judge you for whatever reason. Just don't listen to it, man. Don't,
yeah.
Don't listen to the noise. Pete Carroll of the Seattle Seahawks. Pete Carroll talks about it all the time. Don't listen to the noise. You know, we don't listen to the outside, the networks and what they're saying or how we're ranked, or just go out there and execute, man. And then look at ways to get better. Compete every day. Take the lessons. Figure out how to get better. Adjust, pivot, move forward.
Yeah, that's one of Pete Carroll's things is always compete. And it's so simple. But I kind of take that one layer more. And having constant competition with everybody around you is probably a little bit, I don't know, it's probably not the best way. I do tell my kids that everything matters. Everything's a competition, especially when you're a young man. Everything matters. Everything's a competition. You need to tie your shoes better than the next guy, because you never know what's going to be the discriminator between you getting the job and the other guy getting the job. Always have your hair cut. Always have a firm handshake. Always look the part. You know, yeah, okay, there's a time to turn it on and turn it off. But just remember that at the end of the day, those things matter. Like, everything matters in real life.
Yeah, you're always being evaluated at some level.
Everything matters. And one of the things that I loved about what Pete Carroll was saying was he was saying always compete, but really he was saying you're competing with yourself. Yeah, you're trying to be a better version of yourself today than you were yesterday. And you know what? If you ran a 5.0 yesterday, run a 4.9 today. You know, run that breaking route just a little bit better today. You know, those kinds of things. And if you can just make that a goal to have that constant, steady improvement, then I think you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and that's where courage becomes so important, and that courage over discomfort piece that I was talking about, because when you step out of your comfort zone and you face situations that make you uncomfortable, instead of staying in the fear and going, well, I'm not going to do that, then guess what that's going to do, man? That's going to help you build resilience and confidence. And then the next hurdle that you have to come over isn't going to seem so big, right? Because you start to build that resiliency and that confidence little bit over time. And now all of a sudden, dude, you're just humming.
Yeah. Well, this fades in nicely to the next four-letter F word, and that's fail. And all of the things that we just got done talking about can help you deal with failure and the fear of failure. So there's one thing, right? There's the fear of failure, which is what we were just talking about. And that can preemptively lead you down a road, right? Well, let's say that you deal with that and you cope with that well. You make your best game plan. You go out and you execute that game plan and it doesn't work. How do you deal with that? So you were headstrong enough to get through all of that fear of judgment. You were able to get on the stage and give the speech, you know, all of the things that we just got done hashing out, but it didn't work. Now what? Do you curl up and you say, oh, fuck it, I guess I'm just a failure, and then you sink into your depression? Or do you show a little bit of resiliency? Do you show a little bit of mental toughness and get up and dust yourself off, capture the lessons learned, assess, implement, and then move on to the next iteration?
I love what you said right there, right? Because you were saying that at the end of the day, when it comes to failure, it's what is the story that you're telling yourself about the failure? That's really the impediment.
Yeah.
Whatever anybody else is saying doesn't really matter, right? It's what's going on between your two big ears and that gray matter. What's the story that you're getting?
It's not the critic that counts.
Yeah. So, you know, and what's the story? Oh, I'm stupid. And oh my gosh, I made such a fool of myself. And that's the stories that we tell ourselves. And the problem is you have a decision to make when that stuff happens. Because I'm going to tell you what, man, if you're brave enough, often enough, you're going to fail.
Yeah. Fail daring greatly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what the man in the arena says, right?
Yeah.
You're going to fail.
You stick your neck out enough.
You're going to trip up and fall every once in a while. It's okay. It's part of the process. What's not okay is letting that then adjust how you approach other things, right? What you need to do when that happens is you need to learn from it. If you let those stories go on in your mind, all you're doing is feeding your insecurities.
Yep.
That's it. You're just telling yourself, hey, man, I'm not good enough. You know, I'm not cut out for this. Whatever that story is that you have in your mind, when you stay on that path, all you do is feed the insecurities that you have about yourself. So how do you overcome that? You go, okay, I fucked that one away.
Yep.
So what do I need to learn from it? And what do I need to do different next time? And how do I apply that to the next situation? And you move out and you move forward, man. And that's how you learn. Failure is one of our greatest teachers. And what happens is so many people, when they fail, turn inward, play that record in their mind, and they never recover, you know, or it prevents them. That then generates the fear that prevents them from stepping out, which mm-hmm. prevents them from having opportunity, you know, or newer opportunities down the road, right? Instead of just learning from it.
Well, there's, you know, there's a pile on to that too. And they, a person may try something one time and it doesn't go the way that you thought it was going to go, which it probably didn't, honestly. I mean, if there's one truth, it's, who was it that said, no plan? Oh, it was that, that German dude. Mm. And then Mike Tyson got kind of famous for saying is no plan survives the first attack with the enemy. And then Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until they gets punched in the mouth. You know, like something's going to happen. Your plan's going to go to shit. All right. You can throw up your hands and you can say, well, I tried and walk away. Or you can be determined and say, okay, I tried once. Let me try again. There's a big difference there.
There is.
There's a big, and let's go all the way back. And if the listeners haven't listened to episode zero, go back and listen to episode zero. What is the first words that come out of my mouth? The very first time that you ever heard the Be One Change One podcast, the first words are, I'm a fucking idiot because I had screwed up the inputs and the outputs on the damn machine over here. Right.
Yep.
Now, I'd love to say that I haven't made that mistake again, but I fucked it up a couple episodes later.
Yeah.
And then there was the Saturday morning that I got here and didn't have the damn memory card.
Yep.
You know, I could have thrown my hands up and say, fuck this, podcasts are stupid, and gone back home and read a book. Instead, what did we do? We jumped in the Jeep, went and bought a new memory card, and we solved the problem, and we moved forward.
That's right.
And we made a great episode that morning. We did. So, yeah, I mean, a little bit of its mindset, a little bit of its experience, a little bit of its just downright determination and grit. I think there's a lot of elements to go into how do you combat failure, but one of them is like probably the most glaring one is just your mindset towards that failure. That's it. If you have a mindset towards failure to go, okay, I realize that I'm probably going to screw this up. I'm going to learn from it what I can. I'm going to try it again. I'm probably going to screw that up too. And eventually I'm going to get a good enough product at the end. Dude, we have not recorded yet. We have not recorded a podcast that I was able to upload to the computer and put directly onto the interwebs.
Plenty of edits.
Every one of them requires edits. Now we're getting better. I think I have the record for but you have the record for the longest You know, we're going to mess it up.
Yeah.
You're going to mess it up.
And it's okay.
But it is, you know, and you try to fix it. You try to get better and you try not to make the same mistakes twice.
Yeah, and that's true in your professional life and your personal life. I mean, I made plenty of mistakes in my first marriage, and I've been able to take the mistakes that I made and apply them to my second marriage, and my second marriage has been much better. Yeah. So, you know, good. I mean, you learn things, and you just move on, you press, you get through the hard stuff, learn what you can about yourself, what you need to adjust, do that self-inspection. And that's, again, the defining the values piece is so important because I think when you know who you are at your core, then a lot of the background noise tends to fade away. You know, when that will give you some confidence in how you're stepping out into the world and the decisions that you're making, even if other people are questioning how you're going about it. And the other thing, too, is I think like in the transition stuff that we were talking about earlier, when you go through those transitions in your life, that's one of those things that will give you a little bit of grounding and balance so that you can continue to operate as I'm Jason Cooper. I'm not Cass the fighter pilot, right? It's the thing that helps you separate who you are from the identity maybe that comes along with whatever it is that you do.
Yeah.
That's going to help you find that balance.
Yeah. I think another layer of it too is, you know, we've mentioned several times in the podcast so far about being decisive and you have to choose. And well, there are several different, what do you call them, processes or methods that you can use to ultimately plan and make a decision. And, you know, there's the military decision-making process. There's the 5 T's that we learned for mission planning. There's the project management professional method. There's the OODA loop method. There's all these different methods that essentially do the same damn things. Identify the problem, brainstorm solutions, pick the best one, implement, assess, did it work, yes or no? And then you go back to the top of the list and you just keep doing it over and over and over again. And it's this constant cycle of these different iterations to where eventually something's going to work.
Yeah, and what's important about that too is decisiveness isn't just fly off the handle and make a decision, right?
No.
It's going through that process. And
it's deliberate.
And it's a very deliberate process, right? Gather a little bit of information, think through it a little bit before you just jump off and just make a decision.
Yeah, and some of that comes through training and intuition and
maturity,
and experience and maturity and things like that. But I think when we get right down to failure, you know, I'm going to say it again. I think I've said it in every episode now. Humility is a superpower. You got to be able to say, I don't know, or I screwed up. You know, that iteration that I just tried, it didn't work. Well, let me go back to formula and try something different or modify my game plan that I had. You know, did my game plan work? Yes or no? If yes, continue. If no, well, did that work? Because maybe you implemented your best game plan and you screwed up the game plan. You screwed up an execution piece of the game plan that you had put together. Well, if that worked, jot that down, man. Learn that lesson. Like, okay, I had this great game, what I thought was a great game plan over here. I completely fucked my game plan up, but it worked. So what's the lesson?
Yeah.
Maybe my game plan wasn't great, or maybe there's another way to crack this nut.
Yeah. I mean, that was the first question that you would ask in an air-to-air debrief, right? Was the game plan valid?
That's right.
Because sometimes the game plan wasn't even valid, which is you got rolled. So
sometimes the game plan wasn't good, but it still worked.
Yeah.
You know, and you try to, this is the whole reason that we have these conversations.
Or you learn how to make smart audibles.
That's right. You get down to the root cause, and through enough experience, you get to where you can do these things very rapidly and very quickly. Like, you probably don't think about getting dressed in the morning. You probably don't think too much about what clothes you're going to wear for the day or brushing your teeth or what route you're going to take to work. And that comes through experience.
Yeah.
And trying things over and over again.
All right, good on fail. Anything else on fail?
Not for now.
All right, the next four-letter word is fake.
Ooh, fake, that's a good one. Like fake body parts? Because some of those are kind of cool.
Yeah, well, for me, okay. But that leads to what we're going to talk about, too, which is, guess what? Nobody's perfect, right? And so that's this idea that you have to make yourself perfect is just a fallacy, right? Everybody's imperfect to a certain extent. And you got to step into the courage to recognize that we're all imperfect, right? So you don't have to get it right all the time. You're gonna make mistakes. It kind of goes in line with what we've just been talking about around fear and failure, right? But the bottom line for me is the difference, the big counter to fake is authenticity. And that's what we want to get to, right?
Yeah,
we want to get to authenticity, where you're walking in your authentic self. You know, you can be open and honest. Some of that's vulnerability and courage, right? But it's really just that authenticity piece. And again, that's why the self-inspection and the defining values piece is so important. Because if you don't know what your core values are, you're going to find it a little difficult to be authentic as you make decisions and walk through the world.
No, it's tough too sometimes because I don't think you wake up in the morning and you say, you know what, I'm just going to go out and be a duplicitous, two-faced asshole today. I don't know that that's your active decision. I think it just happens sometimes if you are not true to yourself, if you haven't identified those things. And I have a story from way back when, gosh, I was, I don't know, mid-20s or so. I was driving the truck on the flight line. I don't know if he was like a really, really good bro of mine. I mean, we were friends. We had gone hiking once or twice. But to his face, I was very friendly to him. Behind his back, I'd talk shit about him. Well, that's me being a duplicitous asshole. I didn't wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I'm going to go fuck with Sean today. But that was me not being authentic and not being adhering to my own set of values, which are loyalty and effort and freedom and all those things that we've already discussed. Had I categorized and been those appropriately, then maybe I wouldn't have made that same mistake. And you know what? I lost him as a friend over time.
But what you said there is important too, right? Because you may not be there yet. But
true.
But that's where authenticity can help too, right? Because Brené Brown says that authenticity is the daily practice of giving up who we think we are supposed to be and embracing who we are. You may not be there yet, man, but that's also what, when you recognize, hey, I may have some shortcomings or some things that I need to work on, that may be what gives you the courage to raise your hand and go, hey, boss, I don't understand how to do this. Can you help me with this?
Yeah.
Or give you the courage to go, man, there's a certain duplicitous aspect of myself that really isn't in line with the value systems I think I have. And I need to work at changing that and become more conscious about it and then start working towards that. Right.
Yeah.
So that's where that authenticity can also play a part and helping you kind of shape yourself into that person that you're striving to be.
How about another facet of this that, you know, kind of, we were kind of joking about it earlier about fake body parts, but being materialistic.
Yeah.
Being that guy that always has to have the new gadget or widget or new pair of shoes or something like that. I mean, man, I've been buying my t-shirts at Walmart for a really long time.
Well, dude, you know, we see it all around us. I mean, just look at like the Kardashians and stuff, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, there's people that will do whatever they can to fit in or to present a specific image to the world of what they think they're supposed to be like, right? Yeah. Whatever drives that, whether it's social norms, whether it's, you know, pressure from friends, family. I mean, you can go back to high school, even the fighter squadron. You know, there's guys that will do whatever they can to fit in. Mm-hmm. But that's not who they are.
How many guys got their wings and had to go buy a BMW?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because that was the cool thing to do, man. Right. And all the fighter pilots drive BMWs.
Yeah, sure.
I drove the same truck for 15 years,
yeah,
man.
So did I. Yeah.
Sorry. You know, and I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal or anything. I'm just not a materialistic dude.
Yeah.
I'm a utilitarian. Do I get utility out of this, yes or no? Does the t-shirt cover my body? Do the shoes help me run? Does the truck get me to work? You know, things like that. And I don't know that I've ever been a real flashy kind of dude. I've got three sons, and all three of them are different in this respect. Some of them are much more to the right, and some of them are much more to the left on this bell curve about, you know, having to have the new thing. Like, oh, I've got to have that new pair of what was it? When I was a kid, I think I was like 6 or 7 years old. My mom used to take me to the skating rink all the time. And the hotness back then was Jordache stonewashed Jordache jeans. And man, I needed me some Jordache stonewashed jeans. She ended up getting for me. Ironically, my mom is actually calling me on the phone right now. Her ears must have been burning. But yeah, I mean, aside from maybe having a new pair of pants every now and then, that material shit, man, you're going to be much better served if you invest that energy into relationships, yeah, and into your own self-awareness and your own self. Because at the end, dude, we're all going in a pine box 6 feet under, and you can't take that shit with you.
Well, and you know, like you were saying too, if you're running around in circles that you don't fit into, then get out, right? Because the 1 in 5 project, man, don't surround yourself with people that,
yeah,
you don't share the same values with, yeah, right?
You are the company you,
yeah,
keep.
Find people that are going to, yep, elevate you. Find people that are going to push you, that are going to keep you accountable, that are going to,
yeah,
help you get to where you want to be. You know, I mean, that's how so many kids fall into, you know, drugs or alcohol at an early age. It's, mm-hmm, just peer pressure, and they're trying to fit in, and, yeah, they don't really want to do it, but then they start doing it, and next thing they know, they have some kind of an addiction issue, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's just be your authentic self, right? We have enough fake in the world. I can't stand it, man.
Well, you know, and when I talk about the 1 in 5 project, I talk to people. You're going to have little pockets of influence, I think. And you may have a social media crowd that you hang out with. You may have a church crowd that you hang out with. You may have your bros at work or, you know, the people that you hang out with on the weekends. And each one of those are just different little pockets of influence on you. And where I try to go with it is, okay, I'm sitting on the back porch and I got 4 or 5 of my bros back there. And before you know it, we're all talking about the same things. We're all generally using the same language. We're probably all drinking relatively the same drinks, you know, and you kind of look around and you're going, man, I could change this. I could either influence those people to do something different, or I could find a new group to hang out with if I don't like where this is going. And I've been on both sides of that. I have tried to, in the last couple of years, get to a point where hopefully people are looking at my direction and going, hey, he's doing something different. He seems happier. You know, his jeans are fitting a little bit better. Somebody at our house this weekend commented on Katie. She goes, you look good. Like, you've lost a little bit of weight. Your skin looks better. And it's because we've made some drastic lifestyle changes. And those things are starting to permeate out onto other people.
Yeah.
You know, also, we have shifted and created some different groups that we hang out in. So no longer are we just hanging out with these same people that keep going down these same paths. We're starting to branch out a little bit and create these new little circles. And I kind of look at it as like these small little constellations out there that we're kind of chasing.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah, at the end of the day, I think it's just about being good with showing up with the world, regardless, or just being good with showing up with who you are, regardless mm-hmm. of how the world around that you is going to perceive that, right?
Yeah.
Because that when you can get into that authentic piece of it and you're not trying to just please everybody all the time, then some of those previous things that we were talking about where you're worried about how people are viewing you or being judged, some of that stuff starts to fall away, man. And then it makes stepping into some of those opportunities that are a little scarier or things like that. Or when you do fail, the outcomes of it or that record that's playing in your mind, it makes it easier.
Well, we're on the third four-letter F word here, and you can already see how this knot is starting to tie. And all of these things are related to one another. You know, one of the things that you were getting to was this version of yourself that you try to portray out to other people when behind closed doors, that's maybe not how you really truly operate. And the best view through that window is social media right now.
Mm.
You look into social media and people generally aren't putting their worst days on social media, and there are no makeup pictures and shit like that, right? People are generally doctoring that shit up and Photoshopping shit and taking their happiest picture with them and their dogs.
Yeah, look how great my life is.
Exactly, kind of exactly, right? So there's two things that I think are highlighted here is, one, those people they're putting up a front, and they're probably trying to make people think that their life is better than it really is. The other piece of it is, if you're getting your version of or your reflection of self-worth through social media, stop now, delete all your accounts.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, that is just going to depress the fuck out of you. If you're looking at how awesome everybody else's life is on social media and think that that's what you're trying to aspire to, you have to understand that that stuff is 100% bullshit.
It is all bullshit. Yeah. None of it's real.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Anything else on fake and being authentic?
I don't know. I could probably go fake a little bit more, but I want to get back to the fake body parts a little bit later, maybe another episode.
Okay, we'll spend one whole episode on that just for you, Roscoe.
I'll have to download that explicit content little badge and put in the bottom of our thumbnail for that one probably.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, at the end of the day, the people that are out there trying to be something that they're not happy people. You know, because until you can accept where you're at and who you are and be authentic, you're never going to find happiness for real.
You know, it's kind of funny. We've been sitting here for, I don't know, 6 or 9 episodes, and we're talking about self-change and self-awareness and change yourself and self-improvement. That does not mean go out and get fake tits.
Yeah.
All right? That's not what we're trying to get at here. If you're going the store-bought direction, you're probably not looking at this the right way.
Yeah.
Just saying. All right? Yeah. What's next?
All right. The last one I got on the list is fume.
Anger.
Yep. Rage. Anger.
Yeah.
Right? We're supposed to be tough, angry men.
I guess so. Kill the mastodon and
drag
it home and skin it and wife get in there and cook it kind of thing.
We solve things with our fists. Right?
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't like a good old-fashioned fist fight every now and then? And to be honest with you, I mean, let's go back to social media for a second and today's society. If today's society would let us just go out in the yard and throw down a little bit, maybe we'd have a lot less of this other bullshit that's going on too.
That's true.
You know, but we can't do that. We can't exercise that demon like maybe we used to in the schoolyard. But generally speaking, I think I know where you're going to go with this.
Where am I going?
Well, rage, anger is generally probably not a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it just goes back to, I think, some of the societal norms and the ideas of masculinity that are pushed on all of us as men that are just so false, right? Like, you know, and unfortunately, because of dudes like Andrew Tate and all these other motherfuckers, you know, this toxic and masculinity have become synonymous with each other, right? And they're not. They're not. You can be a masculine person. You can be a masculine man. That doesn't mean you go out and pick fights with everybody and, you know, you're the toughest cock on the block or whatever, right? Like, dudes, being a man is about protection. It's about providing. It's about helping, you know? It's about mentoring.
Yeah.
That's the key. It's not about this idea of rage fest and, you know, women are subservient and Yeah. Screw as many chicks as you can, or whatever it is these days, right? I was laughing the other day because I'm driving home from working out, and of course there's this dude in a big tricked out truck. No offense against trucks or tricked out trucks for that matter, but you know the most macho things in America are AR-15s and giant pickup trucks, because let's be honest, all of them you can decorate pretty easy.
As Cass is looking over my shoulder at my big ass Ram 2500 out in the driveway.
Well, they're the things that men. I think they're the things that men like to accessorize and decorate the most.
Well, I'm compensating. So. Okay, just give me a break.
But no, this guy had a license plate that said, never forgive. And I'm just like, dude, really?
Yeah.
Like, that's your message?
Yeah. You know, how much of this, though, is society has been sold a bill of goods through the narratives that are pushed, through social medias, through the mainstream medias, through these things where, I mean, look at what all was happening during COVID, man. All the riots and all the hating. I mean, you had a left side, you had a right side, or you had a blue team and you had a red team, or you had a mask team and a no mask team, or a vax team and a no vax team. I mean, and people were encouraging us to hate each other.
Yeah, dude, we're all on the same team, man.
Seriously, like we're all just trying to survive this shit.
Let's just all get through it together.
Like this idea that you can't sit down and disagree with somebody. Have civil discourse with someone and then walk away. You and I have disagreed on things. I disagree with my wife and I live with her. I sleep in the same bed with her every night. You can disagree with people, man. You don't have to get angry and go chop down a tree every time you get your feelings hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to show your badass, be a badass friend.
There you go.
You know, be badass at work.
Yeah.
You know, be a badass father or husband, you know, or boyfriend, you know, and show up and be true to people and authentic. Now that said, right? I mean, part of the problem, too, is I think there's some truth to the fact. So I'm just going to, if there are any ladies that actually listen to this podcast, you know, don't be the, if your partner is mature enough and courageous enough to be vulnerable with you, don't beat them up for it. You know, because I think there are some women out there that would rather see us die on a white horse than ever admit that we're having an issue with something.
There's one thing. I mean, like being brave for your family is one thing. And you've said it, I know, before on the podcast that vulnerability is one of the greatest displays of courage that there is. So why can't those two go hand in hand?
Yeah.
You know, but how I don't, like when I go home in the afternoons, I don't go home expecting my wife to ask me how my day was. It is nice to get that every now and then.
Sure.
And you know what? There's every now and then, thankfully it's not very often, but every now and then I come home in a pissy mood. Maybe I had a bad day at work. Maybe I didn't get to go to the gym. Somebody cut me off in traffic. Who knows?
We're human, you know, man.
I'm fucking tired because I didn't sleep good last night.
Sure.
But she doesn't beat me up for it.
Yeah.
You know, she'll sit there and listen to me vent for a little bit. And typically when I get it out of my chest, I'm good after that. But
well, and this idea too of like never forgive, right? Well,
yeah.
Okay, guys, here's your advice from the 50-year-old man in the room that's been through this shit, okay? Is when you, forgiveness is not about the other person.
That's right.
It's about you.
It's about you.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I don't know if you know who Desmond Tutu is.
No.
Okay, he won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984 for his role in opposing apartheid in South Africa. And so he's well known for this stuff and the whole idea of forgiveness, because he led this charge to kind of, hey, we need to forgive our oppressors, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to read you a quote from him because this is something that he wrote. He said, to forgive is not to be altruistic. It's the best form of self-interest. It is also a process that does not exclude hatred or anger. Because guess what? People are going to do some fucked up shit to you in life. But these emotions are all part of being human. You should never hate yourself for being angry with others who do terrible things. The depth of your love is shown by the extent of your anger. Right. So when you get mad about something and the depth of how that impacts you can be expressed by how upset it makes you. However, when I talk of forgiveness, I mean the belief that you can come out the other side a better person.
Yeah.
A better person than one being consumed by anger and hatred. Remaining that state locks you in a state of victimhood, making you almost dependent on the perpetrator. If you can find it in yourself to forgive, then you are no longer chained to the perpetrator. You can move on. And you can even help the perpetrator become a better person too.
Hmm. I have a very close to me story about that. Very close family members that went through some shit a while back, and I was talking to one of them on the phone, and that person said the other one was begging for forgiveness. And I told the one I was talking to, I said, it's not about that. Yeah. Like, the forgiveness piece is for you. It has nothing to do with that. Now, it may make that person feel better at the end of the day, but it really has no bearing, because all of the forgiveness piece is to yourself. You're doing the act of forgiving is to help you move on. Put that shit in the past and move on. That doesn't mean that you have to forget. Learn that lesson. Go back to our previous conversations about failures and assessing and applying lessons learned to the next iterations.
Yeah.
But the forgiveness has nothing to do with the other person.
It doesn't. No, and I'll share a personal story here. I'm not going to go into a lot of great detail, but what I want to share though is important, because it's also a process. So I'm not going to talk about what happened, but my first wife hurt me very deeply. And I was really mad. And I even probably showed her some hate at times. And it was a process, man. It took me a good year or two to really get to the place of being able to forgive. But when you forgive, you don't have to forget. And what I mean is, you don't harbor anger or hatred towards that person anymore, but you've got to be able to see those people for who they are still too, right? And draw appropriate boundaries and how you're going to show up in a specific relationship based on their actions and whether they're making changes or, you know, just how they're approaching you and stuff like that. But the forgiveness piece was so important, because if I wouldn't have done that, I could have stayed tied and engaged in that rope-a-dope because of the anger that I had. I could have just spun in that circle for a very long time. And by being able to just forgive and move on and then set the appropriate boundaries that I needed to in that relationship so that I could protect myself, it was great, man. I mean, it was exactly what I needed to do for me. It had nothing to do with her.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to get to that point, but really what it comes down to is, you know, anger is an emotional response. So how do you combat that? It's through emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And emotional intelligence can come through some self-inspection.
Yes.
We've already talked about a little bit. And my hope is that, you know, this podcast, we kind of geared it towards young men and the younger generation. Anyone really can take this away, but that self-awareness piece of it, it's a learned process. It's something that you have to practice, but hopefully you can get to the point where you can see things before they happen, you know, kind of like a Jedi master, man. You're sitting over there Zen like in the lotus position, and you go, you know what, I can see my anger starting to build, so I'm just going to choose to not lash that out. I mean it's still there. I don't think you can completely get away from it or have it so that it just doesn't happen. Maybe if you're, I don't know, the Buddha maybe, but if you can get to the point where you can suppress it just a little bit and maybe not let it pop.
Yeah. Or just walk away, give yourself the space, count to 10, whatever it takes, right?
Decompress.
And then, like I said, you know, boundaries are important in situations like that. I guess if I was going to tie it back to the story that I just shared, for me, like, forgiveness isn't forgetting, accountability, or condoning a hurtful act that somebody's done, because it's not about them, right? It's really about how you're going to move forward in the process. So it's really the process of kind of taking back that power for yourself, right? Because when you're engaged with somebody like that and you stay in that rope-a-dope with them, what you're really doing is you're giving your power away to them, right? Because
it creates a cycle too.
Yeah. And you're allowing their actions to completely influence your reactions, you know, and how you feel day to day. And so when you can separate yourself from that, that's where you can really, and I'll tell you what, man, I wouldn't be able to show up the way that I do in my second marriage if I hadn't been able to forgive. Cause if I was still wrapped up in any of that, like, that would have a huge impact on my relationship with Alicia, because I wouldn't be able to show up the same, because a part of me would always still be attached and engaged over here.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Yeah. When you're dealing with emotions and it's not just anger, it's really any emotion, to include maybe fear, you kind of have two choices. You can react or you can respond. And reaction tends to be a lot more subjective and off the cuff and not pre-planned or preordained. Whereas a response is a little bit more objective, a little more measured. Maybe you've chair flown it a little bit. You've kind of practiced it in your mind. You know, if this happens, then I'll respond this way, those kinds of things. But I think that that's probably the big separator. And that comes through emotional intelligence, just comes through several iterations and self-awareness to be able to see these things for what they are. I mean, I've got hundreds of stories of sitting there on the couch and getting angry at my kids or getting angry at Katie or something, and I just go into resting bitch face mode. Katie knows when I'm upset because I'll go to my room for probably about a day. I go back to my room, watch TV. I don't want to talk to anyone. I just kind of I remove myself from the situation. That's kind of how I cope with it, at least in the immediate, because I have had a history of a temper in the past, and I don't like showing up like that. I don't like it. You always end up saying some shit that you don't mean, yeah, or that you can't take back or something like that. So I choose to just remove myself from the situation for a little bit, and then we'll come back and we'll hash it out. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, that's a good way to approach it.
Last one that I had on my paper was, and I think this is going to be a good conclusion to all this. If you can't get a handle on some of these things that we've talked about, it can lead you to this four-letter F word, and that's funk. You get into a funk. You get into a rut. You get into a depression. You start to rely on external motivators and maybe even some substance abuse, or maybe you go home and you kick your dog or shit like that, right? This self-loathing cycle that you can get into. I would hope that through some of these discussions, you can at least avoid that a little bit. Find out what makes you happy and chase that. It's a process to be able to define happiness for yourself. And I think that it's super subjective. It's very individual. My version of happiness is probably different than your version of happiness.
Yeah.
But I think that constant pursuit of happiness and wanting to be in that joyous state rather than a depressed state, that's a good goal to aim for, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if we're honest too, like sometimes when you're in that funk, because we've all been there, there's going to be periods in your life where it just sucks. You know, and there's a couple of different ways to approach it, right? Like one way to approach it is to be self-loathing or to find ways to minimize the pain. And I think a lot of men do that through alcohol or through some other type of substance
or violence. Yeah.
Or dude, you can look at it as an opportunity to actually sit in all that shit you're feeling and figure out what the fuck it's all about.
Yeah. Why do I feel this way?
Yeah. And what's the real thing that's behind it all? Mm-hmm. And how can I adjust? Is there something I need to change? Is there something I need to do? Is there something I need to work on? And go back to that self-inspection and find a way to improve. And it may take time and it'll probably suck doing it. I know it hasn't in the times that I've been in those places. It sucks, man. I mean, I have a really good friend right now that's going through some really difficult issues, and he doesn't want to deal with how he feels. He just doesn't. And so he keeps ping-ponging back and forth between these different situations because he's just trying to go to whatever feels good at the time. And the problem with that is he's never going to get there, right? Because until he addresses the underlying fundamental issue,
yeah,
that ping pong is just going to continue, right? Or he's going to end up making a decision that's not going to be a good one. And then a couple of years down the road, he's going to be right back in the same situation, yeah, you know? And so I know it sucks. I know it's hard, but sometimes you just got to, there's a book called Transitions that I read, and it's really good. And it talks about, you know, sometimes in a transition, it's like walking from one side of the street to the other side of the street. But the problem is that you're sitting down in the middle of the street and you've got traffic stopped and everybody's honking at you and everybody wants you to move, but you don't know which way to go, yeah. You know? And guess what? Sometimes you just got to fucking sit in the middle of the street and figure it out.
Yeah. Well, you have to choose.
Yeah.
You have to make a decision. You know, am I going to continue to go down this path? And I think it's natural at different points in your life, especially if you're raising a family. I think it's natural to get on kind of cruise control.
It is
a little bit. You know, you get into this, you just kind of get into a rhythm.
Fall into our habits.
Yeah, you get into a rhythm. Our roles. It's like get up, take the kids to school, go pick the kids up from school, fix dinner, go to bed, get up, take the kids to school.
Yeah, it's over, a little lather
and over and over for like 12 years, right? Well, there's ways to break out of that. And a lot of that comes through this self-awareness piece of it and being able to recognize that you are in a rut. You're just stuck. I mean, I know guys who are our age and older who've been doing the same shit for 30 years.
Yeah.
Don't you want to do something different, man? Oh yeah, well, this is just the way I am. Well, that's bullshit because at any time you can change the way you are. All you have to do is make the decision to do it. If you don't know how, call me. We can talk about it, right? You can go through these processes. So to me, that's a little bit of a cop-out. Well, yeah. It's just who I am.
It's like we were talking
about
before.
My daddy was like this way.
It's like we were talking about before. Guess what, dude? If you want to be badass, do the hard stuff. The hard stuff takes work. But if you want to get better, you got to do the hard stuff. That's just the way it is.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
It's fucking life. Sometimes you just got to go through the hard thing. And you got to do the hard work. I guarantee you, if you do, you will be 1,000 times better when you get to the other side of the street.
Yeah, well, there's the two different mindsets. There's the fixed mindset, the growth mindset. We agree?
Yep.
How do you get to the growth mindset? Well, the growth mindset lives on the other side of comfort. You have to push through that comfort boundary and get into the uncomfortable. How do you get faster at your 5K time? You have to run a little bit more. Shit's uncomfortable. If you want to bench press or squat 300 pounds, that shit's going to be uncomfortable. If you want to lose a little bit of weight, if you want to get your college degree, whatever it is, you want to get that promotion. We just talked about this a few episodes ago. You want to get your promotion. You got to have to branch out of your comfort zone, maybe get on another team, learn some new skills, you know, approach your manager or your team leader and have that uncomfortable conversation to where he knows that you're aspiring to different things. So yeah, you gotta embrace the discomfort a little bit to be able to break out of it.
Absolutely.
You're going to have to face failure. Yep. You're going to have to face a little bit of fear.
All the fears.
You're going to have to maneuver through all the fake bullshit. All these things that we've been talking about through this whole episode all tie together. If you don't figure out how to maneuver the failure and the fakeness and the fear, then you're going to end up in a funk. And that's what leads you to depression. That's what leads you into isolation. Somehow you get to a point where maybe your viewpoint is the world will be better off without me. You know, my kids don't call anymore. My wife doesn't want anything to do with me. Maybe she divorced me, whatever it is. You have to learn. You have to be resilient enough and you have to be brave enough to be able to face these things and work through them. And if you don't know how, that's okay, dude. Fucking call somebody.
Call me.
Send me an email. Look me up on social media at Paul Roscoe White on all the social medias. You can find me there.
Yeah.
But reach out to someone. Dial 988. Get on the phone with somebody who maybe can get you in touch with the right people to help you through this stuff. Because I've lost two really good friends in the last 90 days because of this shit right here. The shit that we just got done talking about for an hour and 13 minutes.
Yeah.
I've lost two really good friends that I won't be able to sit around and have a glass of whiskey with anymore. Because they went down that road.
Yeah, I'm tired of putting nickels on the grass, man.
I tell you what, man.
It's a gut punch every time.
It's sad. It is. It's sad. It's sad on a lot of different levels. I'm sad that I lost a friend. I'm sad that they got to that point and we didn't know. Or I'm sad that they got to the point and maybe we knew that they were going down that way. We just didn't know how bad it really was.
Yeah.
You know? So please, 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 guys, raise your hand, call somebody, talk to somebody, reach out to somebody. And for those of us who are sitting here on the outside looking in, I noticed both of these guys, we saw the trajectory going downhill. We made efforts. trust me, guys, you don't want to be sitting where I'm sitting, second guessing, could you have done more? Like I was telling you about the one guy. Yeah, I could have went to his house and put a bag over his head and threw him in the back of my truck and drug him to a center to get him some help. You don't want to be sitting here where I'm at second guessing shit. So yeah. Have these conversations, get that shit out there. There's no reason that we should have this escalation. These suicide rates are going up and up and up the way that they are.
Yeah. All right, brother. Any other closing comments?
No.
All right. Well, thanks for sticking with us today. We appreciate you guys. We love the ones. All right. Be the one.
Be the one. Thanks for flying with the B1 Change 1 podcast. If you got something out of this show, then be the one and share it in your circles of influence.
You can be our wingman through our website at www.b1change1.com. That's B and the number one, change and the number one.com.
We invite you to be the one and join our fighter squadron on social media at B1 Change 1 on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. You can follow us at Paul Roscoe White on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as Roscoe's website, www.paulroscoewhite.com.
You can email us from the website and please leave comments, share, and ask questions, or leave ideas of things you would like to discuss on future podcasts. Most importantly, be the one that helps us win the algorithm by leaving a review on whatever platform you're listening on.
Thanks for joining. Until next time, be the one.